fat sources, I think, are still a really good part of my diet. I've kind of gone, not gone as crazy with the, like, the bulletproofing stuff, not adding butter or coconut oil to everything. So I've kind of cut back on that a little bit, but I'm happy to where it's going. I'm glad it's gone down, because it was pretty scarily high, even though I, you know, I have the genetic predisposition. My family history of high cholesterol, but now that's going down, and I still feel pretty, energetic and whatnot. I'm pretty happy about it, but I also think the numbers going down, besides the dietary shift, is also incorporation of intermittent fasting.
Yes.
Which is, boom, 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 segue into our main topic of today's podcast.
Yes. You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. Now, here's your hosts, Nick and Shannon Birch. Thanks for checking out this week's episode of the Addicted to Fitness podcast. We are back this week with another kind of deep dive on a specific topic that we're pretty excited about, because we have some personal experience with this one. When I say we, I really mean Nick.
Yeah.
So we're going to just give you some quick intros, but before we get into the real meat of the episode, we want to thank you all for listening and definitely encourage you to check out our website, where all of the goodies that you'll hear about in today's episode are going to be located. The links, the pictures, the details, everything. So head over to addictedtofitnesspodcast.com and check out all the good things we have there. We even have a shop page.
Yeah,
there.
We do. Yeah, we got some of our ATF approved items up on that page that you guys can check out, including our affiliate links to Steak Mobility, Amazon, our Amazon link, and then our for the Hemp Coffee Exchange, the links there, of course. And going back to the Amazon, we have some of our Amazon products that we have had the ATF stamp of approval, so you guys can check that out, including the one we talked about last week, the protein water, which is including our favorite flavored one, the blue raspberry.
Yeah. Although, what was that? The new flavor was like a
tropical
coconut.
Yeah.
Oh, that's happening, man.
I think it's coming out. I believe it's out now as we speak. It's
That's gonna happen in the near future. Yeah. You're probably gonna see a quick little snippet of that on our Facebook page, which you can also check out. We've got all the links on our website. So Facebook and Twitter there, and we'll be sharing. We share kind of like additional insights and some kind of behind the scenes and extra stuff there. Yeah.
And then Twitter is the ATF podcast, correct?
Correct. All right. Yeah. So all the links are on our website. It's just easier.
That's true. That's true. And in addition to visiting those pages, we can also encourage you guys to give us a rating and review in both the Apple Podcast app, or you can do it on the Facebook page too.
We'll ask you to do that again later after you've actually listened to the episode. But that's where we want to hear your feedback.
Yeah, and we actually have some feedback we want to talk about this week in our Listeners Talk Back section.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we do, as Shannon mentioned, we're doing another deep dive into another kind of dietary topic.
It's very trendy.
Yeah, and we did that a few weeks ago when we talked about the keto diet and kind of deciphering hidden sugars on nutrition labels. Mm-hmm. And somebody actually commented on that podcast, our friend Jennifer Moss, who is actually a podcast host herself. She's the co-host of the Baby Names podcast, so shout out to her podcast. She let us know, she said, "Excellent, I started reading labels 5 years ago, and it's amazing. Makes it longer to shop, but now I know what I'm putting into my body." So,
boom. Oh, so important.
Yep.
And it's really hard to stop once you start.
No, we're big fans of that, obviously. We love going. I know you have to drag me out of the grocery store quite frequently, because I love looking at labels and looking at stuff. But now I'll
like find you in a corner with your camera.
Yeah.
And like you're taking pictures of random products, like you're going to go research them later.
Yes.
And it's sometimes it's a little bit weird.
Yes, of course it is. but now I think people or grocery store executives are starting to recognize that, because they're adding more and more items to grocery stores that are making them conducive to people staying out, hanging out. I mean,
what do you mean?
The Whole Foods in our area has a bar and like wine bar. They do wine flights, they do cheese tastings. Now the Publix in our areas are going to start doing Kawa coffee bars inside their stores.
Yeah.
So I think they want people to hang. They know people are hanging out a little bit longer in the grocery store. So.
Well, yeah. They also just really want to make more money.
Well, yeah, I know.
Slim profit margins.
Yeah, but I think they know that people are hanging out a little bit longer. So. And I enjoy that, and I applaud that too.
Especially anybody since that free adds Wi-Fi. A coffee bar is. Definitely got your vote.
Yes, absolutely. And a bar.
It's an easy sell.
Bar. Why not? All right, so let's jump over to the training recaps. You're going first. Boom. To you.
Oh, pressure's on.
Yep.
Well, my training recap is more going to be on the dietary side. Mm-hmm. And I'd say I've been doing this now really kind of diligently for the last month and a half, like 6 to 8 weeks, and that is meal prep and meal planning. So specifically, not just winging it each week. Like I've been like doing a really solid job, I think, on just preparing grocery lists and mm-hmm. everything. You know, even if you just get the same stuff every week, that's usually like a safe bet. But I've been really trying, especially in the last month, to introduce some new recipes. It is so easy to fall into the rut. We've talked about crutch foods previously, mm-hmm. and I feel like the previous 6 months to my efforts in starting to try to be better, I'd really fallen back on some crutch foods and like healthy, like crutch foods can be healthy too.
Yeah,
but it was like the same things every week, and I mean, that gets old. And your diet, like your body, I mean, you can develop allergies to things if you eat them too much. And just need to add some variety. So I did. And I actually, we've uncovered some super good recipes.
Yeah.
And I have kind of a rule that if it's not a big batch dish that I can cook up on like a Sunday, it's got to be quick and easy.
Yep.
And I think even like, last week was a good week. We came across chickpea cakes, which that sounds weird, but it's basically like falafel, I think, if mm-hmm. I understand what falafel is. Mm-hmm. It's basically like, you know, like hummus, but in a, like a little cake patty form. Yeah. And oh my gosh, they were so good. And they had cumin, and they had turmeric and pepper. And, oh, like, all the good things, like, all those spices and ingredients that are just packed with healthy things for you. We made a huge batch mm-hmm. that lasted us the entire week.
Yeah.
Well, and we were doing something specific with them.
Yeah, avocado and then sun-dried tomatoes on there.
Yeah, he had a very specific recipe that he was making it. And I threw it in my salads and freaking rocked.
Yep. So, even Ella had some. She liked it.
Yeah. Ella, who just mm-hmm. grabs hummus by the fistfuls, mm-hmm. Who that's our daughter, if anybody who's listening the first time and is like, who is this Ella person that's so uncivilized? Yeah, that's our 10-month-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, that's, I'm a fan. I told you we need to make it again.
So. Yeah, so that's probably been my biggest score lately is meal planning and just doing good solid experiments, adding some fresh stuff to the list.
Yeah, big fan. And that other one too recently, the spaghetti squash and the
spaghetti squash comes back into season.
I was very appreciative of that because I think the dietary changes we've done have kind of helped what I would have in my training recap for this week. I went and got my annual physical about 2 to 3 weeks ago. Got the results back this week and talked with the doc. And big couple things that we noticed. And overall, everything very good. Couple deficiencies. Well, I shouldn't say deficiencies. Somewhere I'm on the lower range of was iron and calcium, which is interesting. because, I mean, I don't know. It's like I feel like I have both of those sources in my diet, but maybe not. Maybe I need more, you know, more, because I know leafy iron greens. As far as, yeah, I probably need more leafy greens. I try to eat at least one serving per day, but I probably got to kick it up a notch. And then also, but I have been eating, because iron, you know, and animal protein is a big source of it. It's probably the most readily available. We talked about iron on the podcast before, because there's difference between the vegetable iron and then the iron in meat. Yep. So I have been eating that, but I've actually taken a little step back from, I'd say, a lot of beef and pork, and going more chicken and fish, which kind of leads me to the next thing that was actually, I had a drastic reduction in, which I was happy about, was my cholesterol. So my total cholesterol went down by nearly 70 points, and then the LDL, which is considered a quote-unquote bad cholesterol, is down by 60 points.
That's great.
So that's good. You know, it's still over, you know, higher than what's recommended, but we've kind of talked about it a little bit on the podcast, haven't done a deep dive into it yet, about kind of how there's coming new research coming out about cholesterol, you know, considering breaking down LDL, the bad cholesterol to good bad cholesterol and bad cholesterol. So it's like
the good bad and the bad bad.
Exactly. So it's a little bit more complicated, but the fact that it's gone down in general, I'm very happy about. And I think it's obviously, I believe, it is mostly due to dietary changes.
Well, I will say a lot of the recipes that I've been adding into our repertoire have been plant-based.
Yeah, I think having more plant-based is good. You know, I don't know. I would have to. I haven't been doing a lot of tracking of how much protein I eat on a daily basis. But I know I'm still committed to eating animal protein. That's not changed.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you've eliminated. I'm just saying we've had more plant-based.
No, it's true. That's very true. And I think hopefully my animal protein sources have shifted a little bit away from conventionally raised beef and pork too. When we do eat beef, it's grass-fed, but also my red meat is usually venison, luckily. And
dare I say that your diet has become more vegan?
Vegan. I would love to say that.
Yeah. I think that, honestly, except maybe pizza party Friday nights,
yeah.
which are standing in this house, mm-hmm. and we do not miss them. Except for that, I'd say you're probably, like, closer to that vegan diet.
I love it. I was a big fan of it. When we talked about it on the podcast before, I'm a huge advocate of it.
Yeah.
I mean, being a true omnivore is, usually protein is at a, when you think about it historically, protein was a premium. You know, it was a premium option. You know? Or a limited option, I guess premium, but hopefully you know what I meant. But these, the fat sources, I think, are still a really good part of my diet. I've kind of not gone as crazy with the bulletproofing stuff, not adding butter or coconut oil to everything. So I've kind of cut back on that a little bit, but I'm happy to where it's going. I'm glad it's gone down, because it was pretty scarily high, even though I have the genetic predisposition. I have a family history of high cholesterol, but now that's going down and I still feel pretty, you know, energetic and whatnot. I'm pretty happy about it, but I also think the numbers going down, besides the dietary shift, is also incorporation of intermittent fasting.
Yes.
Which is, boom, 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 segue into our main topic of today's podcast.
Yes, and it is something that I remember when you first started trying it, you maybe were a little aggressive in your efforts, and I was like, you're freaking insane. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of like when intermittent fasting was just starting to pop out. You'd start hearing it once in a while. I hadn't heard about it that much. I don't think it was mainstream at this point. Mm-hmm. This is what, like a couple years ago?
Yeah, maybe 2 years ago.
But yeah, I thought he was bonkers, like batshit cray.
Well, I think it's tough combining it with my occupation.
Yeah.
I think I'm obviously we're going to go into some details right now, but reading some of the research, it's tough being, you know, such basically a personal trainer trying to fast when you basically, your first client is at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then your last client's at 6:30, 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You know, so it's tough. And, you know, using fuel as fuel, food as fuel, fuel as fuel. Wait a second. Food is fuel. You know, obviously, it's my body's craving some more fuel throughout the day, and trying to just shut off those kind of hormones that are those hunger signaling hormones is something I'm very interested in, because a lot of the research, which we're about to go into, talks about how it is super beneficial to maybe hold on to that little, not break fast as early as people think they should.
Yeah. And so, and you, if you've like been interested in intermittent fasting and kind of introducing it to your life, we can probably share some good tips about how you might be able to do that and not drastically have to change your life.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about fasting, general topic, and then we're going to, you know, obviously go into intermittent fasting too. But we got this article from Mercola, right? Mercola.com. And it's actually with an interview with somebody we've mentioned on the podcast before, Dr. Jason Fung, who is a kidney specialist from Canada, and he wrote a book about fasting called The Complete Guide to Fasting, Heal Your Body Through Intermittent, Alternate Day, and Extended Fasting. So as I mentioned, Dr. Jason Fung has been brought up on the podcast before, you know, mainly related to controlling type 2 diabetes and obesity and whatnot. And he actually did a little interview for the Mercola website and talked about fasting in general. Fasting is actually the oldest dietary intervention in the world. Modern science confirms that it has been profoundly beneficial influence on your health, including weight loss and reversal of type 2 diabetes.
I actually have a nice little summary if you're curious about some of the, like, the benefits.
Mm-hmm. So yeah,
he's got his research, mm-hmm. and I've got mine. And this is actually something that I learned, ironically, through some of my mom articles about how important it is for babies to get onto a strong sleep pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically they have to do a bit of intermittent fasting, and not like, not really. Once they get to a point where they can sleep through the night, like that is the goal. The whole purpose behind that, and that's related to intermittent fasting, is because you need to give your digestion a break. Because when you rest, which is, you know, when you're fasting, you're basically having this massive machine that runs your body, your digestive system. It requires huge amounts of energy. And when you're not putting any kind of tax on it, so when you're not consuming food, you're not requiring it to continuously digest things, because most people eat a lot of crap,
mm-hmm.
that makes your digestive system have to work even longer, even harder. You're going to be using this energy for other things. So at night, typically, like for babies, for instance, it was the example that they're basically getting a break.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so important that they learn to sleep through the night, because that's also the time where they are able to recharge and their systems can then focus on the healing and the growing and all those other things that happen when your body is not putting all of its energy into digestion.
Yep.
So things like cell regeneration, you know, regulating your energy levels, your skin turnover, you're getting lower glucose and insulin levels, and it's proven to tie to lower risk of heart disease. I mean, you talked about diabetes. I mean, all of this kind of relates to that, but you're basically just allowing your body to do this great turnover.
Yeah.
And that healing and growing element, that's so important.
Yep. And I mean, that's kind of a topic it was kind of down the list a little bit, but it's good to bring up now, is especially when you're older, is autophagy, which is basically the removal of bad cells.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically healthy immune cells eating bad damaged cells in your body. And autophagy can only really take place when it's your body is not working on digestion or other, you know, energy consuming functions. Yep. Like digestion.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, during your sleep that thing happens, but it can actually happen when you're not sleeping too. You can have autophagy when your body's not. That's kind of the idea of fasting. You know, your body's working to clear out the bad and damaged cells more often than not.
Yeah.
Because if you're constantly eating throughout the day, your body is constantly working on that, opposed to doing other things like cleaning up the insides.
It's kind of like if you've tried to rub your belly and pat your head and stick out your tongue and walk. Try to do all that at once. Your body's an amazing thing, but it's even that's going to be really challenging. Yeah. And it needs to focus.
Right. So Dr. Jason Fung was talking about, he obviously treated type 2 diabetes, he was having clients and, you know, come in, and he was first treating them with the traditional kind of Western approach, either with that recommended diet that they had or what the diet that they recommended, which obviously now has been kind of, with him, has been somewhat debunked, and also insulin or medication. So then he started looking how this wasn't really helping, how clients weren't actually getting better. They weren't losing weight. They were, you know, essentially they were covering up everything with insulin shots or medications. So he started looking into the how diet really can affect this, how to change it. So he started prescribing low-carb diets. And low-carb diets started working for a certain portion of his clients. And then he noticed that there were other people that didn't really get the benefits of the low-carb diet. They still couldn't get over that hump. So that's why he started investigating fasting, or started prescribing fasting, because it's, like we mentioned, it's one of the oldest methods of, you know, weight loss, prescribed method of weight loss there ever has been.
Yeah.
You know, people have been fasting for thousands of years in order to control weight loss, or just have to do it out of essentially necessity, because, you know, food is not always at a premium, or it wasn't always in surplus like it was back, you know, like it is now, I should say. Excuse me.
Well, it was also treated in some cultures as a bit of a purification.
Yep.
So not, I mean, like it was treated as like a spiritual purification, not just a physical purification. But even cultures today, they very much have like a certain amount of fasting that is incorporated into just their recommendations for healthy living. And I think here in the United States, we've seen fasting be a lot more extreme and be kind of like, you know, attached to binge diets and things like that, the efforts to lose weight, not so much to keep healthy.
Right, and that's what he talks about. He talks about, like, fasting and starvation are two different things.
Yeah.
You know, they're very, very different. You know, fasting is voluntary. You can start and stop at any time, while starvation is forced with no alternatives. Starvation mode actually is guaranteed if you just try and cut your calories. He says, but what's interesting is that fasting doesn't do that at all. What happens during fasting is that after 4 days of fasting, the base metabolic rate actually increases by 10%. So you start burning more calories when you're fasting, and then you'll start burning more fat also. So your body doesn't actually just shut down. It actually switches. So you switch your fuel sources from the carbs that you were taking in, not carbs, but food you were taking in.
It's like ketosis?
Very similar. Yeah, it's very similar. But in ketosis, you're still taking in some dietary fat.
Right.
And so you're working on that, but that burns a little bit better. This one with fasting, you're actually going right to your fat stores.
You're going to your fat stores,
yes.
Versus
ketones.
Ketones,
right.
Which is using fat that you consume.
Yep, but
clarify.
Yeah, exactly. And I know we're going to go back to ketosis and later on this too, because they are definitely very closely linked. You know, we have enough body fat to preserve our life. You know, there's actually been studies, and I'll have to look it up real quick. I'll look it up. We'll put it in the show notes. But there's been, people have done water fasts for a year. medically monitored and everything like that, but there's been actual documented studies that a person actually did a fast for over 365 days but just drinking water. A severely obese person, so they survived essentially on their fat stores alone. But they were closely monitored by medical staff, but they, of course, drank water to survive, because that's one thing you need. You can't survive without water.
I hate to say it and reference this, but it's really topical. Those kids in Thailand that just got stuck in the cave, mm-hmm. they survived off for a week off just water.
Yep. No, it's very possible. Like, but fasting, as they mentioned here, it's kind of, once you get past that 24-hour period and you get past your hunger pangs and, you know, the hormones in your body releasing, just natural hormones that are encourage you to eat, just mm-hmm. to, you know, because they think, you know, hey,
something's wrong.
Exactly. Your body doesn't know that, hey, you have this access to food. Yeah. You don't have access to food. You know, your body thinks, oh, crap, what's happening? Yeah. So once you get past that, then your body starts breaking down that fat, that's what people need to access. That's what's preventing people from, really obese people, from losing the weight. They think, there's still come some, I'm a believer that, and I hear it a lot, people are like, oh, I gotta eat throughout the day to keep my metabolism going. I mean, that's true, but your metabolism is burning that food opposed to fueling other functions that are just as important.
Yeah, and I mean, granted, we say, like, everything that we're saying in here, it's not widespread. This isn't proven to work for every single situation. This is just more increasingly it's being found that it is beneficial for a number of situations. However, like, if you're hyperglycemic or something, not diabetic, maybe this isn't going to work for you, because if you don't eat after like a certain amount of time, your body like crashes and you will, you know, have all those fun experiences.
Yeah, so, but I wonder if you're hypoglycemic and obese.
Not hypo, hyper.
Hyper, excuse me. Hyperglycemic and obese. If you would really crash because you have access to calories.
I've been hyperglycemic.
But you're not obese.
Why are you saying obese?
Obese. Okay, excuse me. Jesus, word police over here.
Well, it sounds like you're saying beast.
I have an accent. Sorry. Obese. If you're obese, but you're not obese.
I'm not obese, but I have always been extremely hesitant towards doing fasting because, like, the one or two times I tried it, I went into, like, a hyperglycemic.
But, I mean, that's similar to the same thing as the keto flu. It's probably, it has a lot of, it's a lot
I
of
similarities. I almost passed out.
I mean, that's why I said it's very similar to the keto flu. I mean, I'm not saying that it's, like I said, I don't know if it's for everybody either. But, I mean, he talks about groups that should not fast include underweight, malnourished, children, pregnant, or breastfeeding women. Right. And you are in that category.
I wasn't breastfeeding at the time. Like, this is, like, back years and years ago when I was still, like, I was very healthy. I was in good shape. You know, everything good. But if I didn't eat at certain intervals during the day, my blood sugar levels just crashed.
Interesting.
So, and I mean, it's not hypo, it's hyperglycemic, but it was just a different situation. And I was only mildly hyperglycemic. I wasn't like severely hyperglycemic.
What is hyperglycemic or glycemic?
I'll include a description in the show notes, but my grandfather actually was hyperglycemic. It's usually like a hereditary thing, mm-hmm. But it's, like, instead of there being, like, food causing your blood insulin levels to, like, jump, it's like your body doesn't make enough, there's not enough in your bloodstream.
Let's go to Google. We have Google right here.
I've not had to, like, really...
Well, and that's another reason why I'm kind of asking you about it, because I feel like your diet has changed, because I feel like you're talking about several year or, you know, but you were a higher carb diet at that point when you were vegan.
It was vegan.
So, I mean, that's a higher carb diet. But so it was, you don't have your carbs and whatever.
Before I was vegan, too. Okay. I mean, this has been something I've had for...
And hyperglycemic or glycemia is an excess of glucose in the bloodstream, oftenly associated with diabetes mellitus. Which I don't know if that is type 2 diabetes.
And it was really bad when I would get a lot of, like, physical activity. Mm-hmm. That was, like, back in my days where I was, like, kind of borderline working out a lot, maybe. And I was, if I didn't eat, I couldn't keep up with the demands that my body needed. And I would go into, like, this hyperglycemia thing. Hyper? Hypo?
Well, it sounds like hypo.
Is it hypo?
Because hyper means there's an elevated blood sugar.
Oh, crap.
Because hypo is a lack of blood sugar. So that makes it sound like it's hypoglycemia, which I did believe I said earlier. Just want to say that. Go on record that I said hypo, even though it was a mistake because you said hyper. Hypoglycemia. Now let's go.
Hypo? There'll be some editing on this now.
Yeah, this is a good pod.
This is awesome. I'm glad you didn't get it all wrong. Okay, it's low blood sugar.
Boom, boom, boom. Hypoglycemia, condition caused by very low level blood sugar. There you go, see? Often related to the treatment, however, a variety of conditions, many rare, can cause low blood sugar in people without diabetes. Like fever, hypoglycemia isn't a disease itself.
Let's swing back up. So, I would get hypoglycemia.
There we go.
This might not fit for people with hypoglycemia because it's low blood sugar.
There we go.
And that was one of the main reasons that I was very hesitant to ever try fasting of any kind in my life because the, like, few times I even came close, hypoglycemia set in.
Hey. We're all learning something today.
Oh, my gosh.
We're all learning something. That's good. No, it's interesting, and I'm glad we figured that out because that's something important. And then, thank God, we figured that out, like you said, because that might be another group. Like you said, the hypoglycemic group, fasting might not be there. Or they have a modified fast because there are different type of fasting.
Yes.
Which Dr. Jason Fung also talked about in his interview.
What kinds of fast? Let's talk about what kinds of fasting.
We'll probably go for, I don't call them extreme down to non-extreme. They're all different types. So the first one he talks about is water fasting, which we just mentioned about that one that was, you know, did nothing for over a year and just drank water.
We talked about chewing water before, remember?
Chewing water, yeah.
Remember that was like a thing that just chewing water and like the motion of that and chewing your food really slowly. We talked about like the guy that was in a concentration camp and that he survived longer than any of the people that he was with because he chewed water.
Mm-hmm. Your body produces certain kind of hormones and chemicals when you chew.
Yeah.
That tell you that you're starting to feel full.
Which is crazy.
So that's pretty interesting. It's amazing. So water fasting, it's basically classified, according to Dr. Jason Fung, you don't eat, you only drink water for several days in a row, typically no less than 24 hours. Water plus non-caloric beverages, a slight variation of a water fast, but you include non-caloric beverages like herbal tea and coffee. Thank you very much. Without milk, though, sugar or other sweeteners, including artificial non-caloric sweeteners. Okay. Mm. I'm interesting to know because this is kind of where I'm at right now. I'm starting to get back on to intermittent fasting or time-restricted eating, which is something we're going to maybe brush on in the end. I drink coffee in the morning religiously because I love it, but I put collagen protein in it. So it's going to be because it's low. It's very, you know, it's not on that list. I think it's about 70 calories, but it is protein, which we're actually going to address in a second how protein might be not the best thing for when you're fasting. Anyways, so another variation of fasting is bone broth fasting,
Yeah.
Same thing. Basically, you're using bone broth instead of any other food. Water and bone broth. Bone broth has healthy fats. Also contains lots of protein. Here we go. This is what we're talking about, which is not really a true fast. In clinical experience, this is Dr. Jason Fong, many who take bone broth in addition to water, tea, and coffee experience good results. If you're getting the results you want, and this is a quote, if you're getting the results you want and it's making it easier for you to stick to the program, then you should do it. If you start getting bad results with fat fasting or bone broth fasting, you can go the classic water-only fast. And he kind of just alluded to the next type of fasting.
I feel like the bone broth variation is like when you have the flu.
Yeah.
I just think like that sounds like when you can't keep anything in your body and you're just trying to get like that base level nutrient in you.
Bone broth is expensive though.
God. It's like the good stuff is super expensive.
I mean, I guess you could make it on your own. That's pretty time consuming. Anyway, the last type that they describe is fat fasting. This one I'm a big fan of. here you're allowed healthy fats during the fast in addition to water and non-caloric beverages. While you probably would not eat a stick of butter, you could have bulletproof coffee, black coffee with butter. You guys know, we've talked about bulletproof ad nauseum. Alternatively, you could add fat to your tea. Keto tea.
Yeah.
Another topic we might talk about soon. Wink, nudge, nudge. Anyways, contrary to popular belief, water fasting is safe for most people, except for those groups we mentioned earlier, underweight, malnourished children, or pregnant breastfeeding women. Pregnant or breastfeeding women. And then they're going to go into intermittent fasting, which, you know, it's basically you have a period of fasting every day.
You break.
Yeah, so, and we, you know, it's best easily to have it associated with, you know, start it when you go to bed or when you finish your dinner the night before, you go through the night, you sleep, that's kind of when you're starting your fast, and then you hold off on breakfast to an allotted or a certain amount of time. I've actually timed it out because I know now, sadly, we don't really eat dinner until almost 8:30 every night.
Yeah, it's true.
So I'm trying. The last 2 days have been pretty good, not eating anything till about 11:30, besides my coffee.
Yeah.
So I have coffee and hold off till about 11:30.
Which I think is like the kind of the trendy thing that you hear a lot of people doing when you hear about intermittent fasting. They're doing intermittent fasting, but they're following the whole like fat fasting where they're using bulletproof coffee as their morning, quote-unquote, like, breakfast, breakfast. And then they're not consuming solid foods with the idea that they're not, like, taxing their digestion and really kickstarting that until they're having solid foods.
Right. Yeah, and there's a lot more in that article, and we'll definitely put the link that Dr. Jason Fong talks about, basically kind of the use of fat to kind of help the issues of hunger, because fat doesn't really spike your insulin, because that's kind of where this all is trying to, one of the main functions the fasting is trying to help is insulin control. You know, fat dietary fat sources doesn't spike your insulin like carbs and or protein, because protein can also do it, certain high levels of protein.
Right. Yeah.
So it's beneficial to have fat sources, avocado, olive oil, the MCT oil, coconut oil that we've mentioned, because that way you won't get that spike and your body won't be, as you mentioned, working hard to break down those foods. And luckily, you know, we've kind of tied this into ketosis when we talked about a few weeks ago, is that the dietary fat sources can still fuel the important, especially brain function.
Right.
And give you like cognitive, still keep you cognitively aware. And then while your body is still working on kind of cleaning up the bad cells in there, but you're not, quote unquote, feel like you're starving.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're tying it in now, because there's some interesting, another article on Mercula talking about how combining intermittent fasting with the keto diet has even more benefits.
Yep.
Because with intermittent fasting, and I'll admit I'm probably a little bit guilty of it, as I just started, restarted, I should say.
I was going to say, you've been doing it for a while.
Is that people have an eating window. for the intermittent fasting, whether it be, 10 to 8 hours, usually 8 hours is where they're finding really the most benefit, 8-hour window, so a 16-hour daily fast. People are eating whatever calories, type of calories they want in that 8 hours. So they're kind of just getting everything. They're not sticking to the keto diet, which is high fat, moderate protein, right, and low carb. I generally eat like that, so I'm kind of there. But some people are just going kind of, they say, I got 8 hours to eat. Let's go.
Yeah. You know, like, so let's hit up the Burger King.
Exactly. So
Arby's all the way.
And unfortunately, they're seeing that type of approach to intermittent fasting is not having the same type of benefits as doing it with ketosis. This is from that article. The other article in Mercula is that recent research highlights the importance of nutritional ketosis when intermittent fasting. While participants lost about 3% of their body weight by eating all their food within 8 consecutive hours each day, by not altering their dietary choices, important disease parameters remained improved. So that's kind of what we were just alluding to, is that intermittent fasting is good for weight loss, yes, but yeah, if you don't have a specific type of dietary approach, you might not be doing the other kind of improvements or the benefits that it can hold or it can produce for you, like autophagy and, reducing the likelihood for, heart disease and other things, yeah, you mentioned earlier.
Yep.
So they talked about, here are some of metabolic health parameters that did not significantly improve when they were doing the intermittent fasting without any type of dietary restrictions. So for those people who did intermittent fasting but did not alter their dietary choices during their 8-hour window, metabolic health parameters that did not significantly improve include visceral fat mass, diastolic blood pressure, LDL cholesterol, HDL cholesterol, triglycerides, fasting glucose, and fasting insulin.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you talk about it right there. I mean, we started off talking about, my LDL going down and my total cholesterol going down. I think it has to do with both intermittent fasting, but also eating a little bit more keto-like diet. Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm very strict keto. I've never tested my ketones or my blood sugar level.
You're closer to vegan.
Right, but I mean, I think vegan and keto are very similar.
Yeah.
Because I think they're generally higher fat, moderate protein, low carb. And, keto is probably more, and that's what they describe it. They describe it as higher fat and moderate protein because we know, and we've talked about it, Dr. Fung mentioned it in his interview, is that protein can spike your insulin if you eat too much of it too.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, it's important. I think there's still a lot of misinformation out there about what the proper way to eat is. And
yeah,
I think obviously everyone is different and there's not one size fits all.
Well, and how about this? We wrap this up with mm-hmm. just some kind of tips, some takeaways
mm-hmm.
On if you're considering approaching the ideal intermittent fasting for your own life, what would be a tip that you would give?
Don't be afraid of fat. Fat okay. can be your friend. Mixing it with
more as like the keto diet though, not just as like, hey, I'm gonna go get a pizza.
Well, true, because that's what I'm about to say. Mixing fat and carbs is a mistake. That kind of counteracts it. Fat sources by themselves: avocado, mm-hmm. olive oil, coconut oil. There's other. I'm trying to think of a non. Well, avocado is vegan, but I'm trying. Hemp, which is also a protein source, but there are sources where they're mostly just fat, and mm-hmm. so fat is energy, essentially. It has twice as much energy per gram as protein and carbs.
Right.
So you have to treat it as energy, not necessarily a bad no-no food. When you have it kind of isolated, when it's mostly fat and not any of those other macronutrients, you can get a lot of benefits from it. It usually keeps you fuller, in my opinion, in my experience. It keeps you more satiated and it helps you fight those hunger hormones, opposed to high-carb things like, processed foods and junk food and things like that. Like
so,
that pizza you mentioned.
So to the last kind of article, like that would be like your biggest takeaway would be like to make sure that you're adjusting your diet when you are in that eating window to make sure that you're incorporating some good fats.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, in carbs is, you know, stay away from refined carbs.
Yeah.
Carbs, you're obviously low glycemic fruit, vegetables, leafy greens, like we talked about earlier. Those are great carbs for you. But then your refined carbs is usually what's going to spike your insulin. Any of the breads, the pastas, the tortillas, things like that. That's usually what's going to go up there. So trying that vegan diet, which you've been hammering the whole episode, which I agree, I'm a fan. I'm a vegan. I almost said pagan again.
I know. It's so tempting.
I'm a pagan.
You're pagan.
Yeah. So, but I think it's really, it has a lot of benefits. Dr. Mark Hyman, the guy who's kind of the champion of it, he's big. I mean, I believe his book was How Fat, Fat Saves or something like that. I know I'm butchering it, but, you know, how beneficial fat is, the dietary fat is, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's a really good tip as to when you're thinking about approaching intermittent fasting, to make sure that the diet during your eating window is going to be a diet that's going to be very beneficial for you.
Yep.
I have a tip. I would say that you don't necessarily have to approach it for a 16-hour period or whatever, you know, that sounds intimidating to you, then it probably is intimidating to you, and it's probably more than you really want to bite off right at the beginning. So just consider the fact that if you don't eat from 8 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock at night until 8 o'clock in the morning, that's 12 hours. And it's not, unless you are getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and starting your day then, it's probably not super hard for you to at least have a 12-hour window where you're not consuming like caloric foods.
Yeah.
Where water really should be the only thing that you're consuming in that window.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe kind of look at gradually increasing from there.
Yep. Yeah. I would say, and a good thing, obviously, there's a lot of coffee fans out there. I'm a coffee fan. Obviously, Starbucks is one of the most popular places, along with other coffee places. If you do want to enjoy those, you got to enjoy it without all the additives, all the sugars and stuff. You can have your morning coffee, too. We just talked about how non-caloric fasts are possible, are beneficial. So you got to stop. Knock that out, because that kicks you out of your fast right like that.
Yeah.
People getting that order at Starbucks with whatever Frappuccino, Macchiato crap that they have in there. It'll throw you out of your fast real fast. It'll actually put you, and then you'll spike your blood sugar, and then you're on the insulin train all day.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I think.
Good tips.
I think that those two are two really strong tips, and really just consider your reasons for doing it. You know, if you're doing this for weight loss, then hopefully it's going to be paired with a healthy physical routine, some kind of activity, and also a really strong, beneficial diet. But if you're doing this as, you know, a lifelong effort to be healthier and really allow your body to do its job, this could be a tremendous thing to add, and it might not be as painful as you might think of as, like, traditional fasting. Like, this could really serve a strong point in your life, and it doesn't, like everything, not every day is perfect. Not every day is going to be something you can plan to do your intermittent fasting. But even if you're just allowing this to be a part of your healthy routine, I think that the intention is still very much felt.
Right.
So we will link to all of the articles, of the sources that we talked about today. And I think our vote on intermittent fasting is that it's a solid win as far as being beneficial to your overall health. And it's a very achievable for your life, for a number of lifestyles. I mean, you talked about how you're making it work for you.
Yep.
And, I mean, even I get at least a 12-hour window usually, if not like 13 or 14 hours. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think we're both advocates. We would advocate for intermittent fasting. I just personally, I'm not going to do it during the day. I'm going to do it at night.
Okay. Yes, definitely a fan of it. And like Shannon mentioned, we're going to put all these links on addictedtofitnesspodcast.com on the show notes. You guys will find them there.
Can learn more.
Yes, and you guys can learn more. You know, I might do it. An ATF product, our ATF approved product, is Dr. Jason Fung's book. So maybe check out the shop page, you guys, who might see Dr. Jason Fung's book up there, because if you wanna, if you're interested in fasting, I'd say this would be obviously the guy to go to. He's really changed a lot of people's lives and helped people reverse their type 2 diabetes and or obesity.
Yeah, so, there's a lot of people out there talking about intermittent fasting, but he's a tremendous resource.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been following him for a while, so he's legit, guys. All right, you got anything else for him?
No, that's it.
Well, I'm glad we discovered hypoglycemic, not hyperglycemic.
And, like, I know this. I know this. I have been this. I haven't really even thought about it for ages.
Letters. Just a couple letters. Suffix.
It's the one that's like, you know, that's not the diabetic one. It's
lack of blood sugar.
Lack of blood sugar.
All right. Now we know. And now it's half the battle, right?
G.I. Joe.
And with that, this has been another edition of the Addicted Fitness Podcast, and we'll check you next time.
Goodbye.
For all things addicted to fitness, you can check out our website, addictedtofitnesspodcast.com. You can also give us a follow on Twitter, @TheATFPodcast, and like and follow the Addicted to Fitness Podcast Facebook page. Last but not least, please give us a rating and review in the iTunes Store. Thanks.
You're like a rogue hair that's growing out of your neck. Maybe do something about that.
I'm starting my beard. That's what I'm starting with right there.